Oodalolly, written by Scootsy Pants, read by Chubby Lip. Having trouble? Rodney's head snapped up and he glared across the clearing. No. The man had been standing there for the better part of a quarter hour, well, lounging was the more appropriate term, arms crossed over his chest, hip and shoulder cocked against the tree, watching Rodney with palpable amusement as he struggled with Sally. Rodney wasn't about to ask him for help. But Sally was stubborn as a mule and refused to halt her impromptu late-morning meal of sweet grass, no matter how much he cajoled or threatened. Rodney finally just slid to the ground, legs folding in front of him with a frustrated oath, back propped up by a shady maple. He really, really hated horses. Within moments, the stranger crossed the small field and paused above him, long legs parted, one hand on a hip, fingers curled dangerously close to the hilt of a dagger strapped to his side. His hazel eyes were sharp, a hint of hardness beneath the blatant mirth, and Rodney blinked, breath hitching, because he knew exactly who he was. Rodney wasn't stupid, quite the extreme opposite, in fact. And although gossip was hardly ever correct, and rarely unexaggerated, John Shepherd had disappeared months ago from the royal court, vowing revenge on the prince, and the rumors that he'd taken up the role of highwayman in the king's forest apparently had some basis in truth. Rodney hadn't known him personally, of course, but the sketch on the reward notices bore a striking resemblance to the man looming above him. "I don't actually have anything of worth on me," Rodney pointed out, trying not to fidget. One half of Shepherd's mouth quirked up. "Good to know," he drawled. "Except for Sally, of course, but she's honestly a shrew, and deep down hates all mankind, and if you took her, I'm not so sure I'd be able to find my way out of this forest alive, and you wouldn't want my death hanging over your head, right?" Rodney gazed up at him, a nervous smile flickering across his lips. The other half of Shepherd's mouth curled, sharp grin belying his lazy stance, and Rodney knew he was in a whole lot of trouble. It was all dirty-faced kids and women and chickens and burly men in tattered clothes with strangely jovial expressions. Ford had introduced them as a merry band of men, and Shepherd wrinkled his nose and jabbed a finger at him and told him he wasn't allowed to name anything. Ever. Ford had just snickered, though, and mouthed "merry men" behind Shepherd's back. And Rodney really wondered if he hadn't been relegated to a special hell for past infractions against what passed for humanity, but anyway. Everyone sported happy, happy faces, except for Bates and Dex. Bates and Dex didn't get along. Well, Bates really didn't seem to get along with anyone, actually, and Dex was quiet and gruff and large and mainly lurked menacingly in the shadows around the encampment. So Bates didn't trust Ronan, which he announced vocally at every opportunity, Rodney found, and Dex always looked like he was one step away from eating him in retaliation. Shepherd mostly seemed to think it was funny. Rodney thought everyone was out of their freaking minds. They lived in the forest, in tents, and stole to stay fed and to feed whoever begged them for help. And when they weren't stealing, they just kind of lolled about and shot arrows at trees. "You realize this is completely ludicrous, don't you?" he snapped. Shepherd bit into an apple and leaned back onto his elbows, feet stretched out towards the fire. Shepherd excelled at lolling about. "Seriously," Rodney insisted. "It doesn't make any sense. I mean, you don't honestly care who's on the throne, do you?" At that, Shepherd turned dark, unreadable eyes on him, firelight washing half his face gold. "I kinda liked Hammond," he said. Rodney stared at him, then stared at him harder. "Did you just hear yourself? You know what? Just..." He struggled up, darting his gaze around. "I think I might make it out fine without Sally, so... McKay. It's been great wasting a few precious days of my life in this dive, but I really should be going." "McKay," Shepherd drew out again, amusement couched in his voice. "You're not leaving." "See, you've said that before, but you've yet to give me a valid reason why," Rodney bit out, frustrated. He really would have hightailed it out of there already if he didn't suspect Dex or that weirdly hot warrior girl, Taylor, wouldn't hesitate to take him down before he could make it past the line of tents. Shepherd grinned. "I like you." Randy rolled his eyes. You know, I actually have a life to get back to.
Oh, yeah?
Shepard didn't sound particularly interested. Tossing away the apple core, he closed his eyes and folded his arms under his head, yawning wildly.
I'm very important, Rodney insisted stridently, and Shepard murmured what sounded like,
You're important to me, too. And Rodney was really glad it was twilight and blue dim, because he flushed all the way to the tips of his ears, and he added, Dirty, rotten liar, to his mental list of things to hate John Shepard for.
Dex was really good at throwing knives. He hid daggers in his hair.
Rodney held a healthy amount of respect for that, because he wasn't insane, and the two of them bonded over delicious fire-roasted pheasant. It was a step in the right direction, he felt. He also made friends with young Ford, which was much, much easier, since Ford was about as dangerous as a patch of grass, despite his flaming dung slingshot trick. And Taylor had taken to smiling indulgently at his honestly uncontrollable ranting. She was like a tougher, female version of Shepard. Bates gave him wary, accusing glares, though, as if Rodney was an inch away from stabbing them all in their sleep, and he called Shepard, sir, with an almost sneer in his voice, and routinely beheaded saplings with a sword, and the only one better than him at archery was a gangly, brown-haired man with a wild mouth and wide hands and an absent laugh. Parrish, Rodney thought his name was, and he tended to fold himself up into the trees and disappear for hours. At night, Rodney would curl into a set of blankets in the tent he shared with Beckett, a nervous Scotsman that served as the encampment's surgeon. He was cleaner than most of them, though, and kept his living space almost scrupulously neat, and apparently he'd been taken much the same way Rodney had, unfortunate enough to have split a wheel on the path 5 months before.
Do you make a habit out of kidnapping unsuspecting intellectuals? Rodney demanded one evening, as they sat side by side at the fire. After learning that Corrigan and Agar knew his good friend Zelenka, a not quite as brilliant as him star among the budding sciences, but Shepard just grinned and shrugged and said, Only the ones worth the effort.
What the hell is that supposed to mean? Did someone put you up to this? Rodney shouted. Because Rodney had more than a few enemies in the academic world and the landed gentry, and, come to think of it, he didn't have many friends, either. But he didn't think anyone would actually pay John Shepard, of all people, to get rid of him. He at least deserved someone semi-competent at evil machinations. And if Shepard considered cuddling a proper way to behave around hostages, well... Rodney greatly feared for the man's mental health, and hoped it wasn't catching.
You're really tense, Rodney, Shepard drawled, hands curling over his shoulders, thumbs digging onto the top of his spine.
Then he murmured, Relax. No one paid me to kill you. And I like you.
And Rodney muttered, Yes, yes, I'm important to you, under his breath, and Shepard leaned closer and grinned against his cheek.
Important my ass, Rodney grumbled, sprawled out across the path, waving a feathered cap as the carriage approached. Sally shifted beside him, nose buried in the bushes, and the rider out front hailed him. Hey, are you all right?
Oh, yes, I'm peachy, Rodney snapped back irritably.
You just interrupted my afternoon nap. What do you think?
The guard was dressed in dark blue livery, had an unstylishly shorn head, and was actually smiling at Rodney when he drew closer.
Get thrown? He asked. And the pretty woman, with blonde hair and a sharp face, leaned out of the carriage window.
What's going on? She demanded, and just when the rider turned in his seat to glance at her, Shepard and Ford swung down from the trees, and Dex appeared in front of Rodney, almost out of nowhere, and an unseen archer, either Bates or Parrish, but most likely Bates, missed the guard by a hair's breadth and took out the carriage driver with an arrow straight through his shoulder, pinning him to the painted wood. It was actually the third time Shepard had used Rodney and Sally as bait, and it wasn't much fun. After a stunned moment, the guard unsheathed his sword and danced his horse backwards to block the carriage door, but the woman inside slapped at his steed's flanks and shouted at him to move out of the way. Shepard grinned lazily and advised, You might want to drop your weapon.
Lady Laura Cadman, it turned out, was Shepard's cousin twice removed, on his father's side,
and she was a massive pain in Rodney's ass. She thought Beckett was adorable, and pestered him constantly about his tent mate, asking inane questions that consisted mostly of, "Don't you think he's hot?" and "Is he courting anyone?" and "Do you think he likes me?" And seeing as how Rodney wasn't a 14-year-old girl, he growled out, "No," and "Who cares?" and "You're trying to make my brain bleed, aren't you?" Eventually, Rodney was forced to abandon the Scotsman's tent, and when he shoved his blankets at Ford and recruited Dex to lug Sally's heavy tack across the clearing, Ford grinned at him and asked, "Why don't you just move him with Shep?"
"Right, yes," Rodney snorted derisively.
Dex gazed at him stonily, brow furrowed in warning. Ford's brow furrowed too, except it just made him look really, really confused. "But I'm perfectly aware he's trying to seduce me," Rodney cut Ford off, waving a dismissive hand. "I'm not about to make it easy for him." It was the first time ever Rodney saw Dex smile. Well, at least he thought it was a smile, and the behemoth's teeth were surprisingly white. And Ford's eyes went round as he choked out, "What?" "Oh, please, like it's not obvious." The nightly back rubs were a dead giveaway, although Rodney still hadn't figured out why the man was trying to seduce him. Rodney wasn't held in any particular favor in either court, King Hammond's or the dastardly usurper Kinsey's. In fact, he'd been thrown out of the keep more than once for his radical and incredibly bright, revolutionary ideas, as well as his stunning, as yet unreciprocated crush on one Lady Samantha Carter. Of course, it was clearly blatant discrimination for being born with a mental capacity far beyond anything those monkeys in the royal circle could even fathom, but that didn't change the fact that he wasn't privy to any sort of political secrets. So, Rodney, despite his self-admitted egotism, couldn't think of a single reason why Shepard would keep him on hand as part of any kind of strategy. Flagging down unsuspecting travelers was something any one of his able-bodied man-apes could do, and the outlaw didn't seem interested in utilizing his genius at all, and really, that was more than a little insulting. "But just make some room for me, Ford," Rodney snapped, interrupting the young man again. Later that night, though, when Ford whispered across their tent in a still bewildered voice, "But Shep's sworn his love to Lady Elizabeth," Rodney harumphed and rubbed a palm over his chest and pretended that he didn't care. Shepard was more of a mystery than anything else, and he got ridiculously giddy over the stupidest things, like stumbling upon a swarm of swallowtail butterflies, or getting caught in a patch of mid-morning sunshine, or watching Dex scare screaming laughter out of the children. He never talked about himself, but gave pieces away with a smile, and showed shades of his past in the fall of shadows over his face when anyone mentioned the Wraith, or the Ori, or the waning Crusades. General consensus was that Hammond wasn't coming back. Kinsey had allied himself with the Sheriff of Janai, and the Holy Wars were second in his eyes to the domination of the people. Atlantis, the King's Forest, was home to all sorts of ragtag outlaws, damned by Kinsey and loyal to the crown. Shepard was only unique in that he fostered a massive hero complex and played savior just as often as thief. Rodney thought it was fairly endearing, except for the times the man's schemes got him shot at, nearly trampled, or lost. "You're lost, aren't you?" Shepard grunted. "You have absolutely no clue where we are." "Shut up, Rodney," he growled, stomping through the undergrowth, letting a lean branch whip back to hit Rodney in the head. "No, really," Rodney went on, ducking. "I find it amazing that you live in the forest, and yet have all the directional sense of a retarded pigeon. Can't you just whistle for Ford?" Shepard shot him a withering glare. "I'm surprised Bates didn't follow us, actually, just to make sure I didn't bludgeon you from behind and leave you in a ditch somewhere." "You're really not helping, McKay," Shepard stopped, placing his hands on his hips, surveying their surroundings with a pinched expression. "I didn't actually think I had to," he gestured toward himself. "Prisoner here?" "You're not a prisoner," Shepard groused. Rodney cocked his head. "Oh, I'm sorry. I suppose I'm an honored guest in your filthy little urchin camp?" Shepard's mouth tightened. "That's right, McKay," he forced out. Rodney tapped his foot, waiting. Shepard gazed off towards the left, over Rodney's shoulder. Rodney crossed his arms and made several more impatient sounds, just in case that any day now Tojig wasn't getting through. Finally, at Shepard's continued silent brooding, Rodney sighed and asked, much, much milder than he'd intended, "Why are we out here, exactly?" Because normally, when he was bait, they left him near a visible path, and there was absolutely no way Shepard had brought him out to hunt. Everyone in camp knew Rodney's views on skewering little furry animals. He was perfectly willing to eat the nearly unrecognizable juicy remains, but no. He tried it once, of course, but the rabbit had just brought out those big, pleading eyes and stared at him with its nose twitching. And how the hell was he supposed to kill and eat something his mind had instantly named Fuzzy McFurskins? A flush spread up Shepard's neck, the tight twist of his mouth relaxing into a slightly sheepish half-grin. "There's a waterfall out here somewhere," he offered, shrugging. Rodney blinked at him. "A waterfall?" "And a spring," Shepard added. His half-grin spread into full, bright bloom. Rodney blinked again. There was ample evidence suggesting Shepard wasn't fully sane. Seriously, what? Shepard rocked back on his heels, frustration from before apparently melted away. "I was taking you swimming," he said, and Rodney palmed his forehead with a groan. "You got us lost because you wanted to go swimming?" "We're not lost," Shepard countered, though it seemed more of an automatic protest than an actual belief. There was no way they weren't lost, and it was so very obvious that Shepard couldn't find his way out of a potato sack. "Okay, right, maybe if I yell loud enough, Dex'll find us," Shepard cut in confidently. And he was probably right, too, because from what Rodney had seen, Dex was an excellent tracker. Not to mention the fact that he truly doubted anyone was unaware of Shepard's horrendous sense of direction. He'd been joking about Bates, mainly, but there was bound to be at least one of Shepard's men, not too far behind them. A swim would have been nice, though. The trickling stream that ran past the encampment was only ever satisfying after a heavy rain. "Right, well," Rodney sighed, "there really wasn't anything left to do but wait." Shepard folded his legs up underneath him, dropping gracefully to the ground, and Rodney settled down next to him. He sent him a sideways glance. "How much do you know about current mathematical theorems?" There were a number of brats running wild in the camp, and they all loved Rodney. It was sickening. Rodney had managed to last 36 years without overexposure to the runny-nosed dwarves, with their tiny minds and ridiculously big eyes, grabby hands, and lisping, grating voices. And suddenly he was accosted by children whenever he set foot out of his tent. The more abrasive he was with them, the wider their gap-toothed smiles became. Rodney suspected brain damage. Or, and the speculation was largely improbable, but a possibility nonetheless, Shepard had fathered every single one of them. They seemed to share his amusement for Rodney as a whole, which was thoroughly disrespectful, but more than likely that simply proved Shepard had the emotional development of a 12-year-old. Jinto and his little friend Reed were among Rodney's most stringent stalkers, so when they failed to materialize as he stomped down to the street one morning, Rodney was just the slightest bit worried. "Look, not that I'm not thrilled I'm too sure of my fan club, but has anyone seen Jinto and Reed today?" Taylor glanced up at him. "I have not seen them since last night," she said, pursing her lips. Apparently, no one had seen them since the night before, since they'd been sent off to bed after dinner. So, of course, Jinto's father, howling, freaked out, and Dex had to sit on him to keep him calm. Then they split up into groups of three and stalked the dense forest around the camp. They found the boys after hours of searching. They'd been treed by a stag who'd quickly grown bored, but they hadn't been able to make their own way down, and by the end of it, Rodney was dirty and sweaty, and his entire cover was blown. He was also wound ridiculously tight, since Shepard had attached himself to Rodney's side for the whole adventure, worried and focused and incredibly hot. And really, how much of that could one man take? "Aww, you care about them, Rodney," Shepard teased, leaning into his shoulder as they sat by the fire. "It's sweet." "Shut up," Rodney snapped, Of course he cared. And then he turned and grabbed the front of Shepard's tunic and kissed him. He caught Shepard's squeak of surprise, muffled it with his tongue, and Shepard held on to the crooks of his elbows as if he'd drown if he let go. And then his grip changed, and he pushed Rodney away, and his eyes were distressingly sad, even as he licked his lips. Rodney, he drawled, not quite a question. Rodney hated himself for stammering. I'm sorry, I shouldn't have. It didn't mean... And he shrugged, trying to ignore the pounding in his chest. When Shepard just nodded at him slowly and got up to walk away, Rodney's hand clenched into tight fists against his thighs. When he actually bothered to listen, there was a low-level hum of Elizabeth that threaded throughout the entire camp, a buzz of excitement and fond smiles wherever and whenever her name was mentioned. Once a week, when Dux brought out his sack of coveted correspondence he and Ford had collected from the villages, there was almost always a note for every single person from the lady in question, barring anyone new, of course, such as Rodney and Lorne and Lady Laura and Chuck the carriage driver. When he finally caught on, though, Rodney noted that the folded square of parchment that passed from Dex to Shepard was always met with a true grin that brightened Shepard's hazel eyes. Rodney was more than a little disgusted that whenever he happened to catch it, open and honest on Shepard's face, he had to look away.